Well, good morning, everyone. Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. We are here every Thursday morning, and we talk tourism with a very important guest. And today, Scott Darlich is here from Strolls and Stories and some other hospitality things that are exciting and they're going on. And that's why we brought Scott back for a brand new show. This particular day, it will be all about you, Scott. So good morning.
Okay. Well, good morning. It's good to be here.
So this is Jump in Tucson, and we're brought to you by Visit Tucson, which is our official promotional agency. And I get to sit here on Thursday, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have a host that does all kinds of different things. Talks about the community leaders here in town. And is very, very important tourism because it is our number one export industry, and it's all about quality of life, and it's really create some great economic development opportunities as well. And you know what's important about Tucson, different from a lot of other cities outside of certainly Southern Arizona, because that's what we promote, is the heritage. The history of the area. And Scott, you were involved in the hospitality for many years, and then something bit you.
Yeah. I did a little career change a year and a half ago. Now I do meeting planning as an independent contractor, kind of a work from home gig, if you will. But in addition to that, I launched Strolls and Stories Tours, which is a guided walking tour company. And I provide guided walking tours Thursday through Sunday in the historic neighborhoods of downtown, where we stroll the charming sidewalks of our historic neighborhoods. And I share the stories of our pioneer founders, as well as our Spanish colonial founding. But a lot of people don't realize the base of A Mountain is one of the oldest continuously inhabited places that can actually be dated anywhere in the United States. There is over 4,000 years of Native American history right at the base of A Mountain, and it's quite spectacular. And so along the tours, I share the historic stories, and there's some really fun tales of Western outlaws and our pioneer founders. They were quite interesting characters, and so there's some fascinating tales that leave people laughing and a little shocked at times, too. So,
well, cultural and heritage tourism sets many communities apart from others. And since we date back, as you mentioned, many, many years ago, I've been on top of there. It's also a favorite hiking mountain. But when you finally get to the top and you just walk around, the artifacts aren't buried very deeply up there, are they?
No, they're not. But if you do go up there, you have to be careful. They shut the dates promptly at sunset. I thought I'd get some great sunset photos one night, and they came through and warned me, we're about to lock the gates. I had to run back to my car and drive down.
So last time I was up there, I entered from, around St. Mary's Hospital area, and I got about halfway up.
Yeah.
And luckily, my one of my folks that worked for me met me halfway, because I knew I wasn't sure I was going to be able to make it up. So we drove up and we walked around, and you can't pick anything up, and I don't know if there's somebody watching you, but you can definitely get some arrowheads and some things that pieces of pottery, and it's just really, it's not buried 6 feet.
No.
It's just right there on top. Now, it's also home of some very important U of A research that's going on there as well. But the tours, I think your customer service gives a little bit deeper back. Is it started when you were a young child, your parents, or was it your hospitality career, or what got you to be positive about sharing this wonderful information?
Well, I grew up in southern Indiana, and of course, Indiana is known for its Hoosier hospitality. And so, I grew up in a small town. In fact, the name small town is kind of our claim to fame. It's the hometown of the famous rock and roll singer John Mellencamp, and of course, his songs are quite story-oriented. His family lost the family farm. farm, and a lot of his songs are written about life in a small town. And so, of course, he recalls the pink houses in his hit song "Pink Houses." And so, anyways, storytelling has always kind of been around me. My grandfather on my mom's side was a World War II veteran, and he would share just really interesting stories. He was a great storyteller, and I think storytelling was really kind of ingrained in me at a young age from that standpoint. I took a job in the hotel business, and it was working as a group sales manager, where I really fell in love with the story of the site visit. When you'd have a client come in looking at bringing a big conference to the hotel or resort that I'd be working at, it was that story of the property, and of course here in Tucson, sharing the story of both Tucson and the hotel, because when someone's bringing a conference to Tucson, you're selling the destination as much as you are the hotel or resort that you're at, because Tucson's really a destination city. It's not it doesn't have a large airport the way say Phoenix or Dallas does. We're considered a second tier airport, and so you really have to sell people on wanting to come here. And when they land here and see the majestic saguaro cacti that dot the foothills and the mountains here in Tucson, they really fall in love with the destination. So
we're okay to give a small plug for the Graduate Tucson. You were there from the beginning, and has a very unique view on the roof, doesn't it?
Yeah, you got a great rooftop with great mountain views up there.
And the obviously overlooking the University of Arizona. And all of the splendor there with the stadium, and obviously all of the colleges that are there. And you did quite a bit of business from the University of Arizona when you were there, didn't you?
The university has a lot of visitors that come in, and it's been exciting to see. When I first lived in Tucson from 2002 to 2006, I always like to say, downtown was really kind of hollowed out at that time. Tucson undertook an urban renewal project in the late 1960s, as so many cities did across the United States, and they claimed eminent domain on large swaths of property around downtown. When I first lived here, starting in 2002, you didn't really go downtown because it was really a 40-year mistake that they made in 1969, bulldozing all those areas. There were still vacant lots everywhere at this point, and it was the Rio Nuevo project that brought in the streetcar, Sunlink streetcar, and other development. And in the 2010s, Tucson's downtown really started to thrive again, and we started to have an urban core once again. And of course, today downtown is thriving and bustling with all kinds of activities. And so it's great, doing the walking tours down there. But it's just been, for me, moving back in 2020, it was a lot of fun to see how Tucson had changed so much. One of the reasons I moved away to Seattle was I wanted to live in an urban walkable city. And so now it's just so great to see that Tucson has a walkable downtown core. And I love offering the guided walking tours in that area.
Now, often what happens when you don't have the cultural heritage significance as Tucson does, they try to recreate it through festivals, and we certainly have some wonderful downtown festivals such as Tucson Meet Yourself and the Tucson Jazz Festival and certainly the Mariachi Festival, those are great, and they bring people downtown, but you took a different approach to get people to come downtown, and we'll be talking about that after the break. This is Jump In Tucson, and my name is Tom Moulton, and we're here with Scott Darlage from Strolls and Stories, and we'll be right back. Well, good morning. This is Jump In Tucson, and my name is Tom Moulton. I'm your host every Thursday when we talk tourism, brought to you by Visit Tucson. And today's special guest is Scott Darlage. And Scott, I understand you offer Tucson History of Tours of Downtown and El Presidio Neighborhood, as you mentioned in the opening segment. And you're going to explore the stories of Tucson's founding and the pioneer founders, actually. You talk about there were real people were part of this. And you have created these brand new tours. Now, tours have been here. There are obviously other successful tours. I guess the Blue Tour or whatever is probably one of the famous tours. But you took it to the next level. and you personalized it. And besides doing all the wonderful research, and every tour guide has a different approach. So let's talk about that approach, but let's also talk about what is, since you've been doing this for about a year now, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What two tours have become the most popular and why?
Yeah, definitely. One of the tours that I offer is the west side of downtown and the El Presidio neighborhood. We start outside on the sidewalk, outside of the rebuilt Presidio walls there. And we really chat about how on August 20th of 1775, Tucson was founded at the special request of King Charles III of Spain. A lot of people don't realize Tucson was a Spanish colonial presidio way back in the day. And so we were founded as a walled presidio, and the word presidio means fort. And now, it was in 1769 that King Charles III sent word that he was wanting this more northern presidio in this area of New Spain. And I like to point out, it wasn't until 1775 that Hugo O'Connor rides up from Tubac to found this more northern presidio at the king's request. Word did travel a little slow back in the day. It's also said that Hugo O'Connor was busy with another issue that he was taking care of. But you're also probably thinking, Hugo O'Connor doesn't really sound like a Spaniard. He was not
a
Spaniard.
He's a game show host.
Yeah, well, he was an Irishman. He had fled Ireland because he was being persecuted for his Catholic faith. And, of course, Spain, very Catholic. King Charles III took him in. Hugo O'Connor rides up, and he finds that the Native Americans over at the base of what we call A Mountain today had a farming community. So he knew there was fertile farmland all in this area. He also had a flowing water above ground where the Santa Cruz River, it flowed above ground at that time. And he had thick mesquite growing all along the marshy banks of the Santa Cruz River. So he had a source of wood. So he had wood, water, and he knew he could grow food. And so he founds the Presidio St. Augustine del Tucson. Now you may be wondering, where does St. Augustine and Tucson come from? It was actually in the 1690s when Father Kino is through this area that he founds a whole series of missions, and he founded a mission chapel at the base of A Mountain. It never does gain the prominence of some of the other missions that he founded, but he designated that St. Augustine was the patron saint of this area. And so when Hugo O'Connor rides up, he knows on the maps, Father Kino was a mapper as well, so he had mapped the area. He knows that the patron saint of this area is St. Augustine. And Tucson, that's an interesting one. That farming community at the base of what we would call A Mountain today, they called themselves Shuksan. And Shuksan roughly translates to at the base of the Black Rock. And for those of you who are quite familiar with the mountains around Tucson, you know that the Tucson Mountains west of town are much darker in color than the others. It's actually a basalt rock, a volcanic rock. And so the Native Americans said they were at the base of the Black Rock, Shuksan. Well, Father Kino had a hard time pronouncing Shuksan, or he misrecorded it. I don't know which. But he recorded it as Tucson. After the 1854 Gadsden Purchase that makes southern Arizona a part of the United States, we start to have all these East Coasters and Midwesterners like myself who start filtering through Tucson, and they morph the word Tucson into Tucson, and folks, that is where we get the name of our city. So, so that's how the city was named. So that's kind of where we start. There's a lot more to that, of course, 4,000 years of Native American history that we touch on as well. We also cover how many national flags have flown over Tucson. People are pretty shocked to learn how many national flags have flown over our city. I'll leave that one as a surprise. You'll have to join the tour to learn. But we then head down Main Avenue, which is where a lot of our pioneer founders lived in mansion homes. So, that's where we start to talk about a lot of our pioneer founders. One of the great ones, of course, if you've been on Main Avenue, you've seen the Steinfeld Mansion. It's a beautiful Henry Troese designed home. And that was where Albert Steinfeld lived. And it's a fascinating tale. Albert Steinfeld comes to Tucson when he's 17 years of age from Denver to work for his uncles, the Zeckendorfs. The Zeckendorfs ran a mercantile here in Tucson, and they ran one one in Santa Fe as well. And one of the brothers, he lived in New York, and he was the buyer. And he would send the product that he would buy out to their mercantiles here. And Albert was their nephew. And Albert's parents were running a mercantile in Denver, a very small town at this point. And they could not afford to feed young Albert. Their mercantile was not successful. And so the Zeckendorfs had met Albert in New York once and knew he was a smart kid. And they were like, well, we'll take Albert off your hands. We'll have him come to Tucson and help us run our mercantile here. Now, this is where the story gets really fascinating. 1872 is when Albert comes to Tucson at the age of 17, but there's no railroad through this area at this point. The railroad doesn't come through this area until 1880. So Albert's parents take him up to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and they put him on a train to San Francisco. Now, this sounds like an odd way to get to Tucson.
Yes.
In San Francisco, 17-year-old Albert gets on a boat and takes a boat from San Francisco to San Diego, where in San Diego, he gets on a stagecoach and takes a six-day ride on the stagecoach from San Diego to Tucson. In fact, at Picacho Peak, the Apache raids on the stagecoach line were so severe that they went past Picacho Peak in the dead of night because the Apache were not known to raid the stagecoach after dark. Albert Steinfeld, in his diary, had written, one of his family members wrote a book that I read about the Steinfeld family. It's just fascinating. And Albert Steinfeld had said he had low expectations for Tucson because in 1872, Tucson was a city of only 3,200 people, and it was primarily mud adobe structures. Now, if you go into the Barrio Viejo today, those mud adobe structures have limestone plaster over them or painted bright colors. Well, that doesn't actually really appear until the limestone plaster and the bright colors until around 1900. Those were originally exposed mud adobe blocks, much like what you would find at the El Tiradito Wishing Shrine or on the outside of the rebuilt Presidio walls. And so, you know, they're kind of, a little shabby looking, to be quite frank. And mud adobe blocks are just sun-dried mud and straw mixed together, and they do weather away in the rain over time. And so young Albert steps off the stagecoach with fairly low expectations, and he says even those low expectations weren't met, he cried himself to sleep that night. The first night he's in Tucson, he cries himself to sleep. The next morning, Albert Steinfeld wakes up and he says, you know what? I have traveled a very long way to be here. I had better make the most of this situation. And in the early 1900s, he ends up buying out the Zeckendorfs, renaming the mercantile Steinfeld's. Steinfeld's Mercantile would become Steinfeld's Department Store downtown. That would be the nicest department store in Tucson. They would end up owning the Pioneer Hotel. Albert Steinfeld would go on to be president of Consolidated National Bank and a huge success. And so, cries himself to sleep the first night he arrives in 1872. So anyways, fascinating story. They ended up being the main investors or primary owners of the Pioneer Hotel downtown. Today, that is the Pioneer Office Building. And when that hotel opens in 1929, Harold, Albert's son, names it the Pioneer. Do you know why it's named the Pioneer?
No, I don't.
That's because Albert considered himself to be Tucson's pioneering merchant, and Harold named it in his father's honor. So
yeah. Now, before the show, we were talking about who could be really called the father of downtown Tucson. Now, we know who the most modern father of downtown Tucson is, and that's our wonderful friend Fletcher McCusker. But I didn't realize that there is a founding father, a pioneer father of downtown Tucson.
Yeah, and, well, he's a pioneering merchant.
and you heard the story right here on Jump in Tucson for the first time. Now, Barrio Viejo. Now, weren't they recently named something?
The Barrio Viejo was recently named a National Historic Landmark District because it is the largest concentration of mud adobe structures found in a single neighborhood anywhere in the United States. How cool is that? The Barrio Viejo, that translates to old town or old neighborhood. That, of course, wasn't the original name of that neighborhood. In the 1840s, as Tucson starts to grow outside of its Presidio walls, south of the Presidio walls, up pops this barrio. It was originally called the Barrio Libre, which translates to the free neighborhood or independent neighborhood. And that's because in this neighborhood, there were saloons. The red light district was in this neighborhood. There were boxing halls. There was all kinds of activity in this neighborhood. And it was really the anything goes neighborhood. And so it was known as the free neighborhood.
I tell you what, you're hearing it here live on Jump in Tucson. And we're so happy to have Scott here leading us back in history. We'll be back, and there's a lot more to talk about. And what's going on in downtown and Tucson. This is Jump in Tucson. We'll be right back. Well, good morning. This is Jump in Tucson, and I'm Tom Moulton, your host. Every Thursday, I'm here talking about tourism, and we always have a special guest star. I say, Scott, you are my star for downtown tours, but we got to know each other at the Graduate Tucson. He introduced me to that wonderful view overlooking the U of A, and we had some, I think, a great Christmas party up there, and just a lot of fun. And who did you at that time know that you were going to not only see it from above, but from the ground level, and doing your own tours? And we call them curated tours. Heritage tourism is very, very important to a lot of cities, but here in particular, because of our Native American population with the Tohono O'odham Nation, we haven't talked really about them, but the Hohokam and the Pima Indians, and there's how many, how many tribes are in Arizona? It's a lot of different tribes that were here.
Yeah, quite a few. Yeah. In the history books, the Pima Native Americans are referenced, and those are today, that would be our O'odham, the Tohono O'odham Nation, which is just south of Tucson. So, but if you're reading in the history books and they're talking about the Pima and you're wondering which tribe that is, it's the O'odham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, of course, all of this discovery was going on, as you were talking about in the last segment, in the 1870s, and the Steinfeld department store eventually got built. The Pioneer Hotel, you know, grew and still here as a major office building in downtown. So all this had to be done in harmony with the Native Americans. Now, it wasn't always, everybody didn't always love each other back in that time, but it's certainly an amazing part of our culture right now. Mm-hmm. Tohono O'odham has one of the largest footprints here in Arizona, and we recognize that the things that are going on here in Tucson were originally Tohono O'odham Nation land, and there's a lot of respect given to the Native Americans. And so we were talking about the railroad started in 1880. Lots was going on. You've heard, of course, about the Ronstadt family and their hardware store, and they were making wagons. And I believe his first name was, I want to say, well, Mayor Ochoa. Was it Fernando? Or I can't remember Mr. Ochoa's first name, but he was the mayor around that time, and then eventually became very active in making sure the station, famous downtown station, was located downtown, not 2 miles away, you know. So obviously that helped change the entire commerce aspect of Tucson, where lumber could be delivered and we could export some things. But you were talking a little bit about Barrio Viejo and how important, but there were other historical areas here in town as well, weren't there?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Barrio Viejo was primarily a working class neighborhood. When the railroad comes through town, it was primarily, obviously, a Spanish-speaking neighborhood. Of course, Tucson originally a Spanish-speaking city. And in 1854, the Gaston Purchase makes Southern Arizona part of the United States. And that takes place because the U.S. government wanted to run a southern route of the Transcontinental Railroad from El Paso to Los Angeles. And to do that, they had to pass through southern Arizona. At that point, the border was up at the Gila River north of here and up towards Phoenix. And they sent a gentleman named Gadsden down to negotiate a treaty with Santa Ana. Santa Ana was hard up for cash at the time. Mexico was essentially broke. And for $10 million, he agreed to sell the United States, southern Arizona, and a tiny little piece of southern New Mexico that sits south of Las Cruces. And that was in 1854. And in 1880, that southern route of the Transcontinental Railroad is completed through Tucson. And Tucson has a huge population boom at this point. In fact, the Barrio Viejo then, in addition to having a Spanish-speaking Mexican-American population, has a large Chinese-American population, because a lot of the Chinese laborers who'd helped build the railroad through Tucson stayed, and they liked Tucson, and when the railroad was complete, they stayed. And in fact, there were quite a number of Chinese grocers in the Barrio Viejo, and one of those grocers operated from the year 1900 until the early 2000s. Four generations of that family had run that store. And so, one of the fun little tales from this railroad arriving here in Tucson is that that was the first time that Tucson had a need for a real educated class of citizens. And these educated class of citizens come to Tucson primarily from the Midwest and the East Coast, they were here to manage all the railroad operations, because somebody had to manage the freight yard, someone had to collect payment, someone had to release the freight to the right people. You needed an educated class of citizens to manage these operations. And when the educated class of citizens arrive here, they see the Sonoran row houses, and they're like, oh, those Sonoran row houses aren't so pretty. We want houses that look like the Midwest and the East Coast where we came from. And they built the Armory Park neighborhood, which sits south of downtown and east of the Barrio Viejo. And if you walk around that area, you'll see kind of, you know, a lot of red brick homes with front porches and our version of kind of like a metal picket fence, if you will, or metal fence in front of it in a small front yard. The funny thing was our Sonoran row houses, and we go into a deep dive of this on my tour. The way in which those were built, they kept the insides of those structures cool. There were several design elements on the Sonoran row houses that kept the insides of those structures cool. Those houses that look like a historic neighborhood around the Midwest that those educated class of citizens built in Armory Park, they were just sweating it out over there. Those structures were not built for our summer heat in any way. And of course, electricity doesn't come through until 1895, so you don't even have an electric fan until 1895. And so in 1880, the educated class were just sweating it out. Meanwhile, the working class over in the Barrio Viejo are nice and cool in their Sonoran row houses. And I just think that's such an interesting little tidbit of history. But to touch on your the Native American history for just a moment, because we didn't go too deep into that. But yeah, 4,000 years of Native American history at the base of A Mountain. They can date back the irrigation canals that the Native Americans used to irrigate their fields there 3,200 years. And they've unearthed pottery and other items that the Native Americans made that they know was actually older than 3,200 years. And so there's 4,000 years of Native American history there. Father Kino founds his whole series of missions, and San Javier del Bac mission sits down on Tona Autumn Nation, and the Autumn people, have been a part of that mission all those years. So a very rich Native American history, and yeah, it's very important that we note that while Tucson's founding is sometimes attributed to August 20th, 1775, we were really founded 4,000 years ago by the Native Americans.
Absolutely,
so,
you talked about A Mountain, and one of the earliest inhabited portions, certainly, of our region. And you can walk up there. It's a favorite hiking route. And we could do a whole show on the hiking trails and the loop, and hopefully soon we'll have one of those. But it's one of the things I think that we ought to do is to honor your tours by maybe giving a couple of free tours away. Can we do that?
Yeah.
Now, Matt, our producer, is always the gentleman behind the wall, behind the glass. And we thought, Matt, that we would give away a couple of tours. And I think this is going to be a pretty easy question for the caller to answer. So, Matt, we want to bring the first caller on the air, and Scott is going to ask him a question. And I think it's going to be relatively easy for this person to have to answer this question in order to win two free tours of their choice. So, Matt, could you tell us how folks can call in?
790-2040, that's 520-790-2040, if you'd like to win one of the two tours.
Now, Scott, there is a question that you are going to ask, and let's do that while we're waiting for the first caller to come in. And whoever calls in first and gets on the live show here, Scott, what's the question you're going to ask them?
Who was it that founded the San Javier del Bach mission? We kind of touched on it a little bit.
I think we touched on that several times, but he was a Jesuit preacher, priest, and came over. When did he come over? You said sometime.
I believe it was in the 1680s. The individual was an Italian. He was educated in Austria and was ordained as a priest. He had wanted to go found missions for the Roman Catholic Church in the Orient. That was his desire, to go to, you know, China and those areas. However, he was assigned to New Spain. He had to make a three-month voyage from Spain across the Atlantic Ocean, arriving in New Spain, present-day Mexico, was assigned to northern New Spain, where he founded a series of 20 missions.
All right, now we have a caller. Matt?
John is first, sir.
John? Okay. Well, we'll hopefully get
next him. Is Mick.
Okay, Mick. Hi, Mick. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Good morning. You are the lucky second caller. And Scott has a special question for you to answer. And if you answer correctly, you're going to win two free tours of your choice. Scott?
Who was it that founded the San Javier del Bach mission?
Padre Kino.
Yep, Father Kino, you got it.
You're the Mick, hey, thank you very much. Stay on the line, and Matt's going to get your information, and we'll contact you, and you'll be able to talk directly with Scott and be on one of the famous tours. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey,
yes,
yeah,
Mick.
Very interesting program, very informative. Love history of Arizona.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? There's a lot of people don't realize how rich our history is.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Well, we don't have to create our history here. It's very authentic. That's what sets Tucson apart from many towns. But Southern Arizona, the entire Southern Arizona certainly is full of rich history, and we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come up with the next segment, and that'll be in just a few moments. We're going to go to a break, and we'll be right back, and we're going to talk a little bit about the future of the Tucson tours from Strolls and Stories. This is Jump in Tucson. Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate you all listening to the show. This is our last segment with Scott Darlich. He is the founder and I guess the head tour guide for Strolls and Stories. So this is going to be now your second year, and you got some new things you want to talk about.
Yeah. So we've got guided walking tours that we offer downtown. Got one route that's the Barrio Viejo and then historic Scott Avenue. And got another route that's the west side of downtown, including the historic Pima County Courthouse. The El Presidio neighborhood. Both tour routes are quite popular. You can book that by going to my website, strollsandstoriestours.com. Tours is plural, so strollsandstoriestours.com. And I offer guided walking tours at set times, Thursday through Sunday. In mid-October, when the heat breaks, in addition to having morning sessions, we'll have afternoon sessions as well. So Thursday through Sunday, mornings and afternoons. It's a great way to get to know the history of Tucson. We chat a lot about some famous architects that designed buildings in these neighborhoods. Henry Trost, the famous architect of the Southwest, designed quite a few prominent structures here in Tucson. And distinguished local architect Roy Place designed quite a number of buildings. buildings as well. And so it's a lot of fun to chat about that architecture. We're working on expanding. I have started to launch some audio tours. So while I can't go everywhere with you, if you like my stories, which have lots of interesting tidbits, I like to call them, you can take me with you via audio tour to places like Bisbee. I've launched that one live. I'm working right now on audio tour of Nogales, which has a really rich history also, putting together an architectural history of kind of Scottsdale and North Phoenix up there as well. So, working to expand because I can't go everywhere, but you can have me with you in some way.
Well, there's there's opportunities for audio tours or self-guided tours, but I think there's really nothing better than a live curated tour by Scott Darling.
Oh, yeah. And I love to share interesting tidbits along the way. That's, I have a lot of fun researching, digging through history files and uncovering what I call my interesting tidbits. You know, one of the interesting tidbits that we didn't get to that I was going to throw in there earlier when we were chatting about the Steinfelds and the Zeckendorfs, I mentioned part of the Zeckendorf family lived in New York. After World War II, it was the Zeckendorfs in New York who sold a very famous piece of property. They sold a piece of property where today sits the headquarters tower for the United Nations. So the Zeckendorf family, of course, was making money off of their mercantiles in Tucson and Santa Fe. And so, that little piece of property there has a little touch of Tucson in it. So it's kind of a fun little tidbit. So, you know, there's lots of fun little tidbits like that I share along the way. A lot of people don't realize as well, the Santa Catalina Mountains actually get their name from Father Kino. He named it for St. Catherine, who was the patron saint of his older sister. Kind of an interesting little tidbit there. But so there's all kinds of interesting little tidbits along the way, and people find it fascinating. They get a good chuckle, and at times they're a little shocked. You know, our pioneer founders, I always like to say, you know, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly with some of them. So, yeah.
Well, we should definitely give a shout out to one of other Father Kino's influence over there at the Tubac Presidio.
Yeah.
And it's a national park.
Yeah, Tumacockery, just south of Tubac, is run by the National Park Service, right. And it's in a preserved state of ruin, if you will, where they put a roof over it, but you can see the faded artwork inside. The National Park Service has done an excellent job at putting together the whole story of what Native American life was like at the mission, and it's actually really fascinating. So highly encourage, if you're down in the Tubac area, visit. It's an incredible structure.
And some of that historical significance built the old Tucson set in 1939 for Columbia Pictures. Mm-hmm. That was a craftsman from the Total Autumn Nation.
Yeah, that's great.
Actually built a replica of the parts of Tucson, mm-hmm. you know, back in the earlier 1800s. And there's a lot of authentic history. Obviously, we've rebuilt some of that as close as we possibly could do that. Historical buildings, you just can't tear them down anymore. I mean, we like to save them.
Oh yeah.
And then Scott will curate them for
That's
you.
That's right.
You know. Now, you do customized tours at all? Have you had any?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Custom tours are available. Also, if you're a member of a group who is looking to do a group outing, I've got a group outing on Saturday with a local professional group here in town. Where we're going to do a guided walking tour downtown. We'd love to work with your group on a special group price to do a tour, share the historic stories. I also, just earlier this week, was hired to give a presentation at a conference taking place here in town to welcome them to Tucson and share with them the history of Tucson, and they just loved it. So if your group or if you have a conference coming into town or your group needs a speaker for a small speaking fee, I'd love to stop by.
Well, Scott, thank you very much for joining us and telling us more about the history of Tucson. History is alive and well and intact, and Scott will be out there and share with you all the information that he's learned. This is Jump in Tucson. Ed Ackerley will be here tomorrow on Friday with a lot of folks. Talked about the Guardian tax law from Hubert, and McDonald's has some things going on with Field of Dreams golf event coming up as well. And we'll be back next Thursday. With the Empire Ranch Foundation. We're going to learn about one of the famous ranches that were in southern Arizona. Jump in Tucson. We'll see you next Thursday.